This is WordPress Weekly, the show dedicated to all things WordPress. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Sarah Gooding.
Welcome to episode 129 of WordPress Weekly for Friday, November 22nd, 2013. I am your host, Jeff Chandler, and joining me this week is my lovely co-host, Sarah Gooding. Sarah, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jeff?
I am doing fantastic. It's Friday, which means the weekend is upon us. A lot of things to talk about that started last Friday night after we went off the air. We're going to get you caught up with all the headlines, and then we're going to talk to our special guest today. His name is Tom McFarlane, and today I'm going to do something a little different. Usually it's just me and Sarah that go through the headlines, but I know Tom is on the up and up on everything that goes on in the WordPress community, so I thought it'd be fun if he can kind of contribute to any of his thoughts and opinions on any of the headlines that we cover that happened during the week. So I'm just going to read his bio so everybody knows who Tom is. If you don't know him already, his name is Tom McFarlane, and he's a self-employed developer who primarily works with WordPress and JavaScript. He runs the website Pressware, which is a custom WordPress development and services company. He also runs a site called Dev Practices, which is a Tumblr about a day in the life of a programmer. He's also the author of the WordPress plugin Boilerplate and Widget Boilerplate plugins. Boy, say that 10 times fast. Also a number of other plugins in the WordPress plugin repository. Tom, great to have you on the show today.
Thank you, sir. It's good to be here.
So the first headline we want to talk about this week is that CrowdFavorite, the company started and operated by Alex King, has been acquired by Velo Media. This was first reported by Brian Krogsgaard, damn that Krogsgaard, over on PostStatus, and he reported that the CrowdFavorite was acquired by Velo Media, and that according to the report, that Alex King, the CTO of the company, will remain with the company, and Karim Marucci, I hope I pronounced that right, will remain the CEO. Alex King said that he's really excited to be joining forces with Velo Media, and he feels that the culture and focus on craftsmanship at CrowdFavorite is special, and he was thrilled to find out that Velo Media shares the same values. He says that we look forward to a continued focus on development excellence, employee culture, and most importantly, top-notch service for our clients. It was also noted that Velo Media will continue on using the CrowdFavorite brand instead of their instead of Velo Media, and they're also going to be doing a complete redesign of their website, which, if you haven't seen, you should check out Velo Media. It's just one big giant flash animation. So, I mean, it's not very helpful. I visited the site and I said, whoa, you know, hopefully, you know, they get a new design going. Tom, you worked for a WordPress development company formerly known as 8-Bit, which is has disbanded, is no longer around. What do you? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is big news. I mean, CrowdFavorite's been around for a long time. It's reputable. They've done enterprise class work, and I think it caught a lot of people off guard to see CrowdFavorite acquired by another company.
Yeah, I agree. I think anybody that has done any kind of WordPress development, even if it's just tinkering with it, or is familiar with Alex King and some of the work that he's done, even if it's just with a simple plugin. And then for those of us that are more plugged into the community, we're clearly familiar with CrowdFavorite, the work that they do, and the level of work that they do, the quality of work that they do. To see that it was acquired was a little like, huh, I wonder what's going on there. But when you read the full story, I think it's, you know, people love drama. There's not much there. And I will say, though, that with Velo Media acquiring them but opting to keep the CrowdFavorite name, which is interesting as far as an acquisition goes, but with maintaining the CrowdFavorite name, I think is actually a smart move because...
Yeah, I think the same thing as well.
Yeah, I just think CrowdFavorite has more brand recognition, and that will serve them well as they move forward with this.
Yeah, CrowdFavorite is well known as a great company who mm-hmm. does great work, and Alex King, with his own plugins, have released a lot of great plugins for the WordPress community through CrowdFavorite. So I think it just makes sense to go along with the CrowdFavorite brand. It's already very established as a great company without mm-hmm. the WordPress ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Now I have actually a question for you guys. Do you guys see Alex King's face with being synonymous with CrowdFavorite?
Yes and no. Actually, Alex King wrote about this when he publicly came out and published a post that discussed how he had cancer and that he was currently in the process of battling that cancer, going through different treatments. And it was a very interesting post where he came out and basically said, this has me thinking about me being the sole face and leader of Crowd Favorite, and he actually went through the process of his different employees and created a plan that would, what would you call it, a contingency plan, where if something should happen to Alex, priorities and responsibilities would be redistributed to other people throughout the company so that it would be able to continue running without missing a beat. I think that was very interesting, and he encouraged other companies that are run and operated by a sort of like the single figure head of the company to encourage creating a contingency plan to whereas if something should happen to you, the company should be able to run without you as long as you dish out responsibilities and take care of that ahead of time. I thought that was a great post.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely because I know basically for a long time I remember just thinking them of being synonymous, but then as the story unfolds, it's all, I think all of that was smart, all of that was a strategic move, and I think that it has done, even though everyone's going to continue to know who Alex is, I think that it did help bring greater visibility to other people who are at the company just rather than him.
Yeah, so I hope this move allows Alex King to continue doing what he loves doing. And seeing that he's going to remain on as a CTO of the company, it'll be a good move. So the next thing we want to talk about, Sarah, you mentioned that BuddyPress 1.9 Beta 1 has been released. It's now ready for testing, and it's a default theme short now that we know that it's been retired. We mentioned that last week. But what are some of the new features that people can expect in BuddyPress 1.9 when it officially releases?
Well, actually, the default theme is still going to be in there.
It
just isn't going to register in the theme in the themes page unless unless you're already using it. So if your theme depends on it as a child theme, or if you've previously been using the theme, you'll still be able to use it in there. I don't want to start any panic because sometimes you get some facts wrong and people start flipping out. But they also have the new notifications component, which is pretty exciting. It'll list all of your notifications on its own dedicated page in BuddyPress. And a couple new widgets, a friends widget, which I think they've needed for a long time, and a login widget. So that'll make life easier for a lot of BuddyPress site admins.
So 1.9 Beta 1 was released last week, so it seems like any day now we should either see a Beta 2 or maybe a release candidate, or who knows, you know, depending on how testing went, we might see the release of 1.9 either today or probably sometime next week.
Yeah, I hope so.
So the next thing we want to talk about is something that is it's a great story, and it's something that we'd like to see more of in the WordPress community. But WordPress consultancy and development company 10Up has sponsored full-time, should I just say her phone name, Helen Husandi? Doing a podcast is rough when you have to pronounce names. Radio work is rough because if you get the name wrong, you know, some of these people take it as offensive. But her name is Helen, and she's going to be working full-time on WordPress Core. And Sarah, you covered this. And how did this come about? How is 10Up able to sponsor her to work on WordPress full-time?
I guess for quite some time they've had their employees giving back time in different increments, 5, 10 hours, and then it just gradually increased, and they were able to offer Helen's time full-time to help out on the core, and it's really awesome. Very unusual for a WordPress development shop to do, and I think it started a lot of discussion about, you know, how is this possible, and, you know, are other companies going to do it? It's really a gift that they gave, and kudos to 10Up, because that's something that not a lot of companies could donate, but people are talking about it more now.
For these WordPress development companies that start off small, let's say 5, 10, 15 people, to have someone on the team dedicated full-time to just work on WordPress, I mean, that's one less person on your team that's dedicated to working on client projects, or, you know, depending on their skill level, you know, maybe you'd rather have them working on client projects than dedicating their time to WordPress. But I think you mentioned in your post, Sarah, that it's important that this demonstrates the company's solid commitment to the open source platform, and it'll be interesting to see if other companies establish some sort of policy where contributing to WordPress, you know, becomes mandatory or becomes highly encouraged. And it's also interesting to see that the 10Up as a company, they have, as you said, a number of, they have two core committers to WordPress as part of their company, as well as another 20 credited core contributors. So that's a lot of WordPress work coming out of 10Up while they're also managing to stay afloat and be a business.
I think that for anyone that has followed closely with Track or with some of the core contributors, whether those that are at 10Up or not, are familiar with who Helen is and the phenomenal work she's done. And I think that, you know, on one hand, you can definitely say that, hey, maybe we're losing a team member, we're losing an asset who can contribute to these other projects. But on the other hand, you've got this company who is backing someone full time, furthering the software platform on which your company is built. So, you can look at it in one respect as, hey, she's not working on client projects, but she's working on the foundational software of our business. So,
yeah, and then in any of the improvements that she makes and that ends up being committed to the core of WordPress are improvements that everybody, even their own company, don't have to mess with in the future. So they
can
run other portions of the software.
Yeah,
it's definitely a win-win situation when companies do that, when they contribute to the software and help improve it, and their company is based on that software.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we see this as a trend. It happens more so in the future. It'd also be interesting if we ever have Jake Goldman on the show to talk about the finances and how he's able to manage the business and also manage a way for an employee to be sponsored full-time on the WordPress core. So kudos to them for doing that. And the next thing we want to talk about is WordPress.com earlier this week added support for Markdown. And Sarah, you came right out and said it. Is TinyMCE on its way out thanks to support for Markdown? And for anyone who doesn't know what it is, kind of explain to us what Markdown is.
It is a syntax that people can use to put HTML elements in there without writing HTML. So it converts your text when you use the Markdown syntax into HTML. So I wrote this opinion piece, and I just wanted it to generate discussion. I wasn't hailing Markdown as a replacement for the visual editor that we have now, but a lot of people got fired up about it. And
everyone took it as you saying TinyMCE is dead.
Well, no, I'm just really excited that there are other options for people to use, because for most people who have ever used WordPress, the only thing they've ever known is TinyMCE. So they don't know any other options or haven't had anything else to work with. So the idea that it would be going away really freaks people out. But what I wanted to draw attention to is just a new option for composing text and for writing blogs in a speedy way without having to go back and forth with your mouse and keyboard. And I think that it's going to be catching on among non-developers first, because people are trying to say, well, you know, this is just for geeks only, and nobody's really going to be inclined to use this. But I found that most of the people who are the most excited about it are non-devs, because I think most developers are just going to write straight HTML. I mean, I don't know that I would ever bother with Markdown. But.
Well, I'm so used to writing in HTML now that I look at Markdown, it's just another syntax I have to learn. There's some things I have to, I'm going to have to print that reference sheet and have it, on the side so I know what it is I'm doing. It definitely looks simpler. I mean, for those listening, if you want to bold something, you have to put the strong tag, and then you have to end the strong tag. Well, in Markdown, you just surround the word with two asterisks, and that will automatically bold the word. Or if you want to italicize some text, you surround the text that you want to italicize with just one asterisk. So it definitely looks much simpler. However, it is a new syntax, and it has its own learning curve. Whether it's easier or not, is up for debate, but it's just another something else that we have to learn.
And from somebody who I blog regularly, and I'm someone that actually uses the WYSIWYG editor for the most of what I do. And then as far as Markdown is concerned, I'm actually a big fan of it. I think that it's a subset, or it's an alternative way of doing markup. You're doing Markdown, and I'm a huge fan of it. And I have a hard time So to offer just an alternative opinion, I have a hard time seeing that this is something that'll be adopted by the average blogger who's used to WYSIWYG because they're used to working in Word or in Pages and things like that, and TinyMCE feels very much like that. But then you've got this group of people who they're technically minded. They're not necessarily programmers or they're not necessarily whatever, but they understand enough about kind of the pseudo-languages to say, hey, Markdown actually writes... Markdown actually makes it really easy to write marked up text quickly. And so, you know, for example, I've got a Chrome extension set up so that I can write my emails in Markdown. And that's something that I use almost, well, every day, every time I send an email. For those people that are on GitHub, you're used to writing in Markdown. And it becomes, you do it enough, it becomes second nature. And overall, I'm a huge fan of it. I'm glad it is now an option. I don't know if this has anything to do with Ghost making it as part of their editor.
Yeah, very good point. And it's something I brought up. I said, you know, when I first saw this announcement, I said, well, that's a feather out of the cap of Ghost.
Yeah, and, you know, but I don't think that, I think this is just an alternative way to write for WordPress. I don't think TinyMCE is on the way out. Just like TinyMCE has Visual and HTML, now we've got Visual, HTML, and we've got Markdown.
So Matt Weave, the developer who got this into WordPress.com, he says that, you know, as a developer, he'd love to nuke TinyMCE from orbit, and there's plenty of other people that feel the same way, but it's not going anywhere until they figure out a visual editing solution that is, number one, better, and number two, addresses backwards compatibility in a sane manner. Mm-hmm. According to him, Markdown doesn't really address any of that. He just thinks that the majority of users won't ignore it, but he's happy to see a vocal minority of Markdown nerds are excited about it as he is. And as far as what they're using on WordPress.com, they're using a Markdown Extra, and they're also added GitHub-style fenced code blocks, yes. Basically the stuff that he wanted. I don't know what any of that means, but maybe you do?
Yeah. Basically, it makes it really easy to put code in posts. So you just use, you know, on your tilde key, you can do a tick, 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 and that'd be a fence. You write your code, and then you terminate the code block with another tick, tick, tick. When you print it out, it wraps in a code block, or so that you can style it however you want within the context of your posts.
So, which we probably need that on the Tavern, Jeff, because we don't have a syntax highlighter on there right now.
Yeah, we used to, but I very rarely ever wrote code, so I got rid of it. But if I guess, you know, let's talk about that off the air.
Okay.
if for those who want Markdown, there's plenty of plugins in the WordPress.org plugin repository for that allow Markdown syntax, but this will be coming in the form of a Jetpack module sometime soon. So whenever it's released as a module, I think I'm going to try and dedicate at least 1 week to trying to write my content in Markdown and then write my experience with it, see if it's difficult, easier, or see what happens.
Yeah, I've done... I'll put a link in the chat real quick. I've got a very, very, very simple plugin that I wrote that adds just a couple of the most common Markdown tags that I was using or that I kind of wanted when I was writing. And so that's another one. But when this comes in Jetpack, I will probably retire it. It's not that I'm a huge fan of competition, so I like when there's options that are out there. But if you have a full-on Markdown solution, then I'm just going to fold project and say, guys, go with this one.
Something that was released, this started earlier this week on Tuesday night. It's a new podcast. It is published through the WordPress Weekly audio stream. It's called Industry Night. It was produced and created by Marcus Couch, who is a WordPress.com contributing writer. And the idea behind this podcast is Industry Night is typically a promotion run by bars and nightclubs and invites other bar industry workers to party on their day off. Most commonly, this is done on Tuesdays. So with this in mind, the Industry Night podcast that Marcus will be producing will be published every Tuesday night. And on the first episode, he interviewed Douglas Carr from a new project called CircuPress, which is a plugin that's first of its kind to allow administrators the power to completely manage their email campaigns from within WordPress, where you can manage your subscribers and send canned spam compliant emails directly from your WordPress administration panel. One of the coolest things about this show is Marcus used his experience in producing audio shows to where it actually sounds like the conversation took place in a tavern, although it didn't. And Marcus so far has gotten a number of praise and good comments from those who have listened to the show so far. So you can, if you check your feed reader for the WordPress Weekly feed, every Tuesday evening or even on Wednesdays, you should see the show show up as part of the subscription. It's part of the WordPress Weekly feed. So kudos to Marcus for doing that, and it'll be interesting to see the future episodes and conversations that he has with plugin developers. Really cool stuff. Next thing I want to talk about is that WordPress 2014, the theme, the new default theme that's going to be part of WordPress 3.8, is now out in the wild. Mm-hmm. And Sarah, what does it mean when you say it's out in the wild?
Well, they've made it available on WordPress.com, so millions of users can go ahead and try it out if they want to, and maybe they'll find some bugs for us before we get it in the 3.8 release. So that's pretty exciting. I think they did the same thing with 2013, if I mm-hmm. remember correctly. They put it out there and let people use it for a while, and then when it gets released in 3.8, you know, everybody will have a better experience with it.
Well, there's nothing like millions of people testing code.
Yeah.
So 2013 is really cool. We've talked about this, even thinking about using it as the basis for the new redesign of WordPress Tavern. And I've played with 2014 on a local install of WordPress with a SQL database dump of WP Tavern. There's some things I like about 2014, and there's some things I don't like. The things I don't like is the, I like the feature content areas. You can have either three or six of them show up either as a slider or in a grid-style format. And the theme looks really good when you use the featured images. But I don't like the requirement of using, you know, million pixel wide by million pixel tall, of course I'm exaggerating there, images, using featured images for the featured content areas. And if you use an image that is big enough to look good on the featured content block on the front page, if you visit the single pose view, if that image is not big enough, you'll see that image plus the placeholder image taking up the rest of the space. So I don't like that. I'd rather have an option to just show a featured image that shows up for the featured content on the front page but then doesn't show it in the single page view. Of course, you know, that's not going to happen. So, and there's a number of other things I like about it. What I'm really interested in seeing is how people are going to use 2014 and create beautiful child themes. I really want to see the imagination of what people come up with using 2014. And one thing worth noting is that Amy Hendricks, also known as SaberUse on Twitter, mentioned that 2014 is sleek and beautiful and responsive, but it's also the most accessible default theme yet. So great for everybody out there who is big on accessibility.
Yeah, yeah, props to them on that. I think that's one thing that gets neglected a lot more than it should.
Yep. So WordPress 3.8 Beta 1 was released, and Sarah, you mentioned that you want people to break it if they can. Looks like 3.8 Beta 1 is on schedule, and we've already talked about a number of the features that are available in 3.8, but if all goes well, next Wednesday we should be seeing Beta 2, right?
Yep. This beta is maybe a little bit rougher than betas we've seen in the past, because
really?
There's so many new features in there, and they're all visible features. So, you know, it's the totally redesigned, admin area and everything. So anything that's broken is probably going to stick out more than something that might be broken under the hood. So Matt's encouraging everyone to test this one. Go to pages that, you know, you seldom look at, and just go all over the place and poke at it and see if you can break it.
You know what he needs? He needs Laurel to use WordPress 3.8 Beta 1. You know, we had her last week, and she's known for breaking WordPress, so she needs to get in there and beta test it.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Tom, with your experience and your engineering background, what do you think about this new development process, this experiment that started with MP6, with features developed as plugins first, sort of like core plugins, but mm-hmm. but now looking at 3.7 and then going into 3.8, the plugins that were developed concurrently along with core, and now when the time comes, you just review different plugins that are features, and if they're ready, merge them into core and work on them. If they're not, you know, just bump them to the next release. What are your thoughts on this whole experiment?
Generally speaking, I am a huge fan of it. Since as of 3.7 with the release cycle, the quicker release cycles that they're doing, I'm a huge fan of that, shipping more quickly. You know, sure, you're saying, yeah, there's less features or whatever, but when you're developing these plugins, you know, first you're going to be able to evaluate them against the current set of WordPress, get feedback, et cetera, et cetera. And then when you fold them into core, then most of the work and the testing has been done. That's not to say that you can just blindly trust that it's going to work, but I think that it gives people the ability to experiment with the features as plugins and give feedback and testing or whatever. And even the core team or even the contributors who are working on it can have, you know, the necessary debates over it. And so, for example, in one case, I know there's one ticket out there right now where people who have been working with WordPress and have been doing so with the MP6 plugin, they were using a certain class name to style their content. But once
that body class.
Yeah. And once it gets folded into core, that body class is gone. Now, yeah, we can sit there and talk about it all day long and the should it be like that, should it not be like that. But I think that maybe moving forward with anything that has potential to be a core plugin, maybe that the class name should be a little bit more semantic. I mean, Matt himself has said MP6 didn't really mean anything. It was just a fun code name, and that's fine. It's, you know, have fun with your software. But if you're being forward thinking and it's going to be a core plugin, then maybe go ahead and give it a semantic name from the get-go.
Yeah.
But overall, I am a huge fan of the quicker release cycles and doing the plugins in tandem and then folding them into the core when they're ready.
Yeah, I mean, so far it's proven to be a great success. I mean, especially looking at 3.7 and 3.8, and those features that didn't make it into 3.8 have been punted, and now they work and continue, and, you know, you should have at least a couple of weeks to really nail them down, and by the time the next merge window opens up for 3.9, you know, chances are they should be ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just this whole acceleration of WordPress development is ongoing and seems to be working out well for them so far.
Mm-hmm. And so I think it's going to take us a couple of iterations or a couple of versions
to nail
more
it down
than just three. Yeah, I think it will take a few more. But right now, I've been really happy with it. I think it's been easier to contribute to core because there's more of tighter deadlines and there's a smaller number of tickets, so it's easier to kind of go through and say, hey, I can do this really quick and spend a couple of hours in an afternoon making a patch.
Yeah, and I also think it's easier to contribute to WordPress if you, let's say you're really interested in one of these features, instead of everybody having to work and develop through core, which was the old way of doing things, you could just concentrate and work on the plugin. And thankfully, with the plugin way of development, you can release often. And, you know, just like the experiment with MP6, they tried to do a release every week to show everybody the enhancements, and they wrote a post about it. And each week was, it didn't matter if it was one improvement or two, they always tried to release the newest version and continue to improvise on it until officially, you know, eventually it was ready. So I think it's easier to contribute to WordPress by just contributing to one of those core features that are being developed as a plugin first.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So that's going to do it for this week's headlines. We have a couple more, but I wanted to spend some time talking with Tom here about his experience with WordPress. You know, yeah. We mentioned this earlier, and you were involved with a company called 8Bit, which was a WordPress consultancy development company. And I'm just curious, how did you get involved with WordPress and, you know, more specifically, become a part of 8Bit?
So my whole thing with getting involved with WordPress started back when I was in college. When I was in the specific school that I was in my university was the College of Computing, and they were looking, in order to get people kind of evangelizing what it's like to be a student at the school, they wanted a handful of bloggers. Well, I was already blogging personally, and so to me it seemed like, okay, this is, I can write content, whatever. And so I signed up. I got chosen out of a couple of, me and I think three or four other people got chosen. They set us up with WordPress accounts. I believe it was WordPress 2.something. And then we got started with blogging, and I blogged through my time at school, blogged through some of my internships, things like that. And my major was in computer science, and so when the time came and I wanted to start making customizations to the blog, it started off with just your basic, you know, CSS changes and then some PHP stuff, and then it kind of began to snowball from there to where I started to take an interest in plugins and themes and so on. And then after school, I worked in .NET for several years, and that was fun. But even in my off time, I was still working with WordPress. I wasn't contributing to it or anything like that, but I was still following the project, still loved the stuff it was doing. And then when I opted to go full-time self-employed, it just so happened that at the same time, the other guys who were doing 8-bit, we all kind of organized and decided to form this company around building primarily themes and a couple of educational resources that we were doing in local meetups and whatnot around WordPress. And so my involvement with 8-bit kind of just happened organically, where the guys that I joined up with, I had met all on Twitter. We all lived in the same area. And then we just started to work together for the next, I guess it was about 4 years. And all that time I was still, you know, I was juggling doing client work and 8-bit work as well. So it was a good time.
Yeah, so when John launched WP Daily, mm-hmm. and he got involved with this Kickstarter project known as PressGram, mm-hmm. just from maybe your perspective or maybe some things that were going on behind the scenes, when was it determined that 8-bit would be shutting down?
Oh, okay. So one of the questions that we've often been asked is, like, is PressGram the reason that 8-bit shut down? And that's not the case. So when John started working on PressGram, that was, I think he first showed us the concept probably, it's been over a year ago. And the idea behind it was cool, and that was fine. And, you know, the way that we see it, we're all working on different things outside of 8-bit time, so that's what this would be. And then it just happened that as this continued to progress, back in August or so, September or so, we all just kind of began to really see our careers or the things that we were interested in taking us in different directions. And so it happened just to coincide with that. But there's no real drama, and there's no real anything to share as far as PressGram and 8-bit is concerned. We still, you know, follow the development of PressGram and see what they're doing, and I keep up with Jared and Chris in terms of what they're doing and vice versa. So I guess
WP Daily and PressGram were projects that John was doing in his, you know, in the outside, the free time, whatever projects you're allowed to work on outside of 8-bit time. I guess that's how they'd be classified.
PressGram would be, WP Daily was under the banner of 8-bit.
Oh, okay.
That was primarily John's vertical in the business. So, like mine, for example, Jared and I were responsible for doing design and development of standard. That was our core responsibility. John was doing WP Daily and some of the business development related stuff that happens behind the scenes. Chris was doing project management, and then we have a couple of people who were doing QA and testing for us.
John was a beast, man. He took WP Daily. I was so surprised to learn that it wasn't even around for a year. It was like 8 months between when he launched it and he closed it, and how he had, I think, over 1,000 posts. He was just a beast when it came to content. And it was like, you know, I had a hard time trying to figure out, where did he get all this time? How did he write all this stuff? How did he publish it? You know, it was crazy.
The guy has blogging in his blood. I mean, he's been doing it for over a decade through various forms and fashions. I've known John for a while, and so he's been doing it for a decade. He's got his strategies in his way, and he also doesn't sleep much, to be honest.
So it didn't look like he did.
so when, like, he's up and he's already blogged 5 times probably when some people are just getting in the shower.
So everybody, there's this notion, there's a lot of articles being published now thanks to Scott Berkin's book, A Year Without Pants, about working remotely, mm-hmm. and what it means to work from home and to be a remote worker, be distributed from the actual company. Can you share what your experience was like working for 8-bit from the standpoint of actually having an office to work out of versus doing everything remotely?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm by nature someone that likes to work out of my house, and I tend to be more introverted, so I enjoy working, like just going from my bedroom over to my office and then getting to work. Having an office, though...
What's rush hour like for you?
It depends if my dogs have piled up in the highway or in the hallway. but seriously, having an office, I will say, it was really cool to be able to have some face time with each other and to be able to hold actual events as a company in a centralized location. That is something that remote companies just can't do. You know, the closest we can do is Google Hangouts, and that's fine, but because no one has to know if you're wearing pants or not. But if you're against wearing pants, then having an office is not going to be good for you. But in all seriousness, having a centralized location where we could all hang out, get some stuff done, forecast and design and get stuff done about the future, there is something that can't be beat about being face-to-face. However, I am someone that I firmly do advocate for remote work. I know that, I mean, you guys are obviously doing the tavern. You guys are remote workers, and I will say that I think that it takes a very specific personality type in order to make it work well, because I've seen, even in my 9-to-5 prior to working for myself, there would be days where I'd work from home and they'd be my most productive. And then there's other days where some people on my team would work from home, or there might be, you know, I'm aware of other people from other teams or even other companies who are working from home, and they say, I just don't know how to do it. I can't find focus. I can't sit down to do whatever. And so I don't think it works well for everyone. And as much as I love the idea of working remotely, sometimes I'm afraid people are preaching the gospel. It's like, this is the new way to get work done. And I don't believe that's true for everybody.
Yeah, thank goodness somebody else agrees with me on that. It's not the end all be all. It's not the new grand poobah of getting things done. I mean, it's hard. There are drawbacks to being a remote worker, you know, anywhere from depending on habits you have as a person, going from so many years of actually working in an office to working from home. Mm-hmm. You don't have coworkers you could talk to anymore. You're just sitting inside a, you know, whatever you call an office, trying to get things done. There's nobody to hide behind. You become responsible for any of the work that gets done. If work is not done, there's no one else to blame but yourself as the worker. I mean, there's a lot to being a remote worker. There are a lot of difficult aspects to it. And I've been working as a remote worker since May, and it's been a very difficult transition for me. I thought it would be easy, but it's not as easy as I thought it would be.
The number one thing that I've found, and right now, so my wife is a stay-at-home mom, and I've got a toddler, and I've got two terriers. So to set the stage of what my house is like at, you know, any given day of the week, it is, for me, it is all about setting up your office in such a way that it is conducive to you getting work done. So for me, I've got my desk. I'm sitting right by a window so I can look out and actually get daylight. I have got a Roku player set up where I can listen to old, like all through October I was listening to these crappy B horror movies while I was working. Other times I've got iTunes playing, listening to anything from hard rock, 70s rock, punk rock, the ambient stations, the, you know, trance stations, whatever. You've got to just find a way to set up your environment so it's conducive to getting you in the zone. And that can take some time.
Yeah, so it's still taking some time for me. I don't know how much more time it's gonna take, but I'm willing to work through it to see what happens, because there's no doubt about it. The number one reason people have said that working from home is the reason why it's so great is that flexibility, to be able to get some work done in the morning, then go out for a morning walk or a stroll, or to get some errands done and come back later that day and get your work done. As long as you get your work done. And you can manage that flexibility and manage your schedule, manage all the different things that are going on in your life. Mm-hmm. Working from home is a great thing.
Yeah, and I used to do that where sometimes, so I like to run, so sometimes I would say, okay, at 10 or 11 o'clock, you know, in the summertime, I would go out and run. But honestly, now I work normal hours. Like I'm early to rise, but I'm normally trying to knock off at 5 o'clock. And that is because a lot of the people that I'm doing work for, they are companies working 9-to-5, so I should be present should they need me or whatever. Like, I don't want to miss a phone call, and they ask me, where were you? And I say, hey, I'm out running. That just, I don't know how that bodes, you know.
I'm running away from my work.
You know, yeah, it's like your last base camp message just sent me into a marathon, so I was out. But but seriously, it's like when I at 5 o'clock is when I tend to knock off and I tend to go into dad mode and try to spend time with the family and whatever. And yeah, I mean, if I want to get up extra early some mornings and work, I can. If I want to start work at 7 or 8, then I can do that. And if I need to get work done later at night, I can do that. But I'm not somebody, at least at this point in my life, I'm not doing the work from 8 to 10 and then take a 2-hour, you know, break to go run and eat lunch and whatever, and then come back to work until 7, you know. But if I will say that if, you know, if I either had a if our family hadn't grown to where it is now, or if I was I fear where I would be if I was working alone and I was unmarried and I was the only one, you know, in an apartment or a house. I think that I'd probably be like that guy sitting in a creepy apartment with a bunch of Coke and pizza boxes everywhere.
Something similar out of the World of Warcraft episode of South Park.
Yeah, I would be like my beard would be. I would have to start entering beard contests, but I would never go because I wouldn't want to leave my precious computer.
Yeah, you'd be leaving the apartment and you go out because your beard got caught in the door when you should.
Yeah. So for me, having regular hours or as regular as I can make them has been good. But once again, it's different strokes for different people.
Now, on your blog, among your developer-centric articles, you've also published a number of pieces discussing WordPress community behaviors. Some of them have been, you know, really awesome and have resonated with me. And one of the one such article is entitled "The WordPress Community Needs an Attitude Adjustment." What motivated you to write that article?
Honestly, it was just kind of being
just general observations you had.
Yeah, I mean, it comes. Excuse me. It comes from really observation that I'm seeing in terms of, or I had seen in terms of being at meetups, being online, watching the way people talk to each other, watching the way people, well, honestly, straight up disrespect each other. Because on one hand, we sit here and we talk about this amazing community that we have and how great it is to be a part of WordPress and everybody loves it. And then the next thing you see, someone else is just chewing someone else out over something is that I, in my mind, is like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, I'm like the whole hubbub about class names, it's like that did not need to escalate into the degree that it did, in my opinion. Yeah, it's an important discussion to have, but whatever. And then there's other times where you see people just getting really disrespectful towards other open source communities, be it Drupal or Joomla or, I mean, you name it. And I know that we've had meetups. I know that we just recently had, I know Matt keynoted it. I believe it was a Drupal conference, and that's awesome.
Joomla.
Okay. Thanks for correcting me. I know that he keynoted there, and that's awesome. And I love all of that. But just seeing sometimes the way that people are, we say on one hand, hey, we're an awesome community, come be a part of it. And then people get to be a part of it. And then they get knocked for certain things, or they're told they're doing it wrong or whatever. And it's like, I hate seeing that.
Yeah. That's actually another, you know, that's another article that you wrote. It was actually called "Saying Doing It Wrong is Doing It Wrong." And it was, you know, it's another form, in my opinion, when you wrote that article, I saw it all over Twitter, all these smart people telling each other, or telling other people and plugin authors, theme authors that they're doing it wrong. And I thought it was another form of, you know, like that, you're at school or something, you point at people and laugh at them and laugh at their mistakes, saying, nah, you know, you're doing it wrong, Dumbo, you know, all that other stuff.
Yeah, and I'm not into that. I mean, there are people out there that know significantly more than I do, and I want to learn from them, and I know more than someone else is out there, and I want to be able to help them. But if we have this whole attitude of, haha, I'm going to take pleasure out of calling you out on you sucking on something that I can already do, I don't know how that helps anybody. And I mean, it definitely turns people away, and I think that it can even turn people away who are involved in the community. They don't want to be associated with stuff like that.
Yeah. What's your take on you know, talking about something in WordPress or talking about how to fix something from a from someone like my point of view that I can't code, but I can talk about issues I'm having or problems and maybe suggest fixes. Mm-hmm. And the response I get is simply patches welcome. I mean, in my opinion, in some aspects, the notion of saying patch is welcome is like the digital equivalent of saying F you, you know, sticking your middle finger up at me. And it's not supposed to be that way. It's supposed to say, hey, if you want it fixed, then, you know, submit a patch. Okay. But, you know, for someone like me that can't do that, and I'm just trying to talk this through, you know, it really irks me when someone just ends my conversation, ends all forms of communication by just saying patch is welcome.
Yeah, that to me is just don't leave a response. If that's what you're going to say, don't leave a response. Because I think it is awesome to talk through issues on your blog. I love, love, love reading what other people write and their thought process behind it. And I love that that's what we're able to do this day and age. If you're sitting there saying, hey, I'm having a poor experience with this, and here are three ways or two ways that I think that it can be fixed, you're bringing potential solutions to a problem that other developers could see. I mean, the only next best thing you could do would be to open a ticket. And I guess you open a ticket and paste your blog post in there. And I know that people will probably just dislike me saying that, but the honest truth is, like, telling patches welcome, it's like, if I complain about my car not running right, I mean, a mechanic is not going to sit there and say, well, change your oil. I mean, that's his job. You know, I'm coming to you to say I have a problem with my car. Would you please help me with this? So it's a really weird phenomenon that exists in this culture, in this community, where it's, we're all sitting here talking about this stuff, and there's people that can contribute and make these things better, but yet they tell you to go do it. If you, and if you can't, then what? So
I think they say that, they say that because they're frustrated. A lot of contributors get frustrated that, you know, people just complain and they don't do, they don't do anything, and they don't see the complaints as feedback or as something important in the whole process of fixing things. So they just, you know, instead of saying, you know, you're just a complainer, they want to say something like, oh, well, do something to help, or, you know.
And,
but
and I can understand that from a point, you know. Oh, go ahead, Time.
Well, so to Sarah's point, there is there's complaints, which is, hey, this sucks, it doesn't work. And then there are proposed solutions where this sucks, it doesn't work. Here's the problem that I'm having. Here's three different ways that I've come up with to fix it. Maybe somebody could help with this. And it's one thing for people to get upset about complaints, but to get upset about proposed solutions because they feel like people are complaining to me is kind of bogus, because I don't know a single person who doesn't complain about something in their life. I mean, look up anything about people complaining about politics. What do you say? Votes welcome? No, you. I mean,
that's classic, man.
And so, I mean, there's so many other ways to go about it, and I just think that if someone offers a proposed solution, and maybe they did it in English and they didn't do it in code, that's okay. But don't people take stuff so personally? And it can be really, it's really interesting that a program like WordPress that is developed by thousands of people can have such an intense personal effect on someone when they're not the only person contributing to it, you know? And so I think it's a shame that that attitude exists. I know it's idealistic to say I wish it would go away, because it won't, but the biggest thing I can hope for is that when people have a problem with something, they offer what they would like to see, and then those people that are saying patches welcome stop saying that, and then someone comes along and submits a ticket, and it goes through the normal vetting process, and then a solution gets implemented at some point.
Yeah, I think with somebody that writes up a complaint and offers up solutions and they don't know how to create a ticket or whatever, instead of saying patches welcome, they're really just shying away an opportunity to walk that person through the process of submitting a ticket and maybe getting it fixed. And then, you know, they can tell other people, you know, it's a missed opportunity pretty much. But you've published a number of articles. I just wanted to say, now that you're on the air and I can tell you in person, thank you for writing those articles, because you're saying a lot of the things I want to say, but I would add cuss words and other things to those to make my point. But you've said those things very eloquently, and I love it when you write stuff like that, because it comes across, it's true, and it's saying, hey, look, you know, there's a problem. We should stop doing this. This is why, and, you know, we can all be better because of it. I hope you continue. When something like that happens, I hope you continue to write those kinds of articles, because it's great stuff.
Well, thank you. That really means a lot. When I get emails or comments like that from people who read the blog, and, like, that's the biggest, in my opinion, that's one of the biggest compliments that anyone that writes a blog can get, is hearing someone say just thanks for writing, because obviously we do it out of love of writing. Yeah, sure, some of us are paid and some of us are making some residual income, but that's not the reason we got into blogging in the first place. That normally came a little bit later, right? And so, I mean, I have no intent and no plans to stop blogging anytime in the future, but yeah, I really appreciate that, Jeff.
Well, earlier this week, you and I participated on Twitter a discussion on whether RSS was dead or not, or at least was on the brink of being dead. I hope it's not, but just to kind of continue that discussion here on Twitter, what has it that you've seen? I mean, we're seeing articles that RSS is dead, and the only reason why people are using it is to scrape other sites. But for me, you know, it's for me personally, I get a lot of my information from Twitter. I'm not using my feed reader as much as I used to, but in order to get the big picture on things, I need that feed reader getting articles from all these different sources I've subscribed to. That's really the only, the easiest way I've learned to get the big picture on certain facets of news.
Yeah, and all right, so in as far as that whole conversation is concerned, I am not someone who thinks that RSS is dead, and I don't think it will probably eventually die, but will be replaced by something else. But I don't think that it's dead, nor will it be anytime soon. But the thing is that RSS was meant for syndication, you know, real simple syndication. And so continuing to push out your material on feeds through RSS, I think is fine. I think that there are still a healthy percentage of the internet population who is using RSS, but the way in which they're engaging with the content they're reading is different. Now, I'll come back to that in a second, but people are also, what I'm noticing more is that my feed reader, for the number of feeds to which I subscribe, and I could not tell you the number off the top of my head, it seems to be decreasing a little bit from what it was, say, a year ago, and vastly decreasing from what it was 4 years ago, because people are setting up dedicated Twitter accounts. And so now what we've done is we've taken what we were pushing out where we could read an entire article in our reader. We are then taking a snippet or a title or a sentence from the post with a link and pushing it out on Twitter. Now, either one of those is fine, but, you know, having just a snippet on Twitter is going to lead to higher page views. But now you're stuck with what you used to do by subscribing to all of these things in your reader. You're now following all these feeds, and so you have this problem of signal to noise, and it's the same problem in a different form. And then there's the engagement problem, which is people, you have a blog and then you have a comment field, but if you post on Twitter, you're likely to get comments on Twitter. If you post it on Facebook, and I deleted my Facebook account some time ago, but I used to see conversations, you post a link to your blog on Facebook, and then all of the conversation belongs to Facebook because it's on Facebook. Well, not everyone can see it because I'm not friends with everybody on Facebook.
There's been services that try and solve that problem by taking all of the comments on a specific article on Facebook or mentions on Twitter and put them all within your comment form, but I haven't seen it. I haven't seen a good solution to where it matches the interface or it actually looks like a blog comment. Instead, it's totally different than what a comment will look like on that site.
Yes, and I don't, you know, the way, especially with systems like Facebook wanting to be a walled garden, I don't know if it's ever going to be possible to fully funnel comments, because if my grandmother posts, not that my grandmother would ever read my kind of blog, but if my grandmother is commenting to me on Facebook about my blog, I don't think she's going to be someone that's going to hop over into a browser and then just start filling out a form and taking things over there. And similarly, you know, we've got Google Plus, where it's really good to go ahead and cross post your information to Google Plus, but now people can comment on Google Plus. And so whereas the number of comments that you got on a blog post used to be a signal of success, I think that it's decreased, because I'll have blog posts that maybe only have, say, 8 comments, but the conversation was all day long on Twitter.
And you'll look at your stats and see, wow, a lot of people viewed this. There's a conversation happening. Maybe, like, a good example, an article shared on Reddit becomes very popular. You get a lot of traffic, barely any comments on the post, yet you go to the Reddit article and there's about 50 comments there because, you know, people are there. It's a community. They feel more comfortable talking about the article in question there than versus on the actual blog itself. You know, I don't know. There's not really much we could do about that.
Yeah, and so that's the thing, is, like, I don't know if we're actually, I guess if you were to sit there and have to formalize it as a problem, which is what programmers love to do, you sit there and say, well, the problem is that we need to funnel discussions back onto the original blog post, but I honestly don't know if that's what the solution is.
Maybe it's not a problem, though. I mean, if you look at it differently, you can't control where the conversations happen or where the community of people are that are connected to each other and discussing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe, you know, blog comments are fading away in some places, but I don't know if it's a problem or not, because the discussion's still happening.
Yeah, instead of everything taking place on the blog, now the, you know, post author would has to kind of take notes on where the conversation is happening around the content they have and go around, have accounts on all those different sites, and actually participate in the conversation on those sites, because those people are already established there, and that's where they feel the most comfortable talking about your content. So it's almost up to the site author now to have accounts on all these different sites to participate in the conversation and all those places, because it's not going to happen all on the blog anymore.
Yeah, and that to me becomes, that gets unrealistic at some point.
Because, yeah, it can get exhausting.
You got to sign up to this forum, this P2, that blog, this area, this thing.
Yeah. And at some point, it's just like, I'm just going to write, and you know where I am, so let me know if you really have something to say to me. Other than that, have fun.
I think that's where we could really look forward to a day when there's a viable option for decentralized social networking.
Yeah.
Where everybody hosts their own content and their own interaction, and there's some way to put it all together, but you still own it on your own blog.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So back in March, Tom, you helped add the coding standards for JavaScript to the developer handbook, and there's now a movement underway to fix JavaScript errors in core with something called JS Hint. So kind of in plain English, what does all this JavaScript improvements mean?
All right, so I also want to give props where they're due. So I did the first draft of the JavaScript coding standards, and then K. Adam White, who works for a company called Boku, came in behind me. He and I talked a little bit through email. He wanted to revise the standards. I was like, go for it, you know. And then he kicked off the initiation process of revising the standards, and then doing this whole effort to, like what you mentioned, is apply JS Hint. So here's the deal. JavaScript is one of those languages where you can get a lot of work done and get something working without necessarily following a lot of good practices or following a lot of good standards. And you know, we have the coding standards for WordPress, and the idea behind that is that when you open up a theme or you open up a plugin, that there should be this consistent set of standards in which everyone is writing their WordPress code. So ideally, like in a utopian mindset, it should look like one person wrote the code. Now, that doesn't happen, but that would be the ultimate goal. As far as JavaScript's concerned, there's nothing like that. JavaScript is, some of it is just, it's a mess. Some of it's great. Some of it's mediocre. But this whole effort of having the coding standard is to begin to have that same mentality of where we've got JavaScript looking as if it was not only written by a single developer, but also that it now has a set of standards and rules. And there are tools that we have that will tell us where we can define the rules. We run the tool against the JavaScript, and then it'll tell us where the errors are. And so we can fix the errors, and then over time, there's a group of us that are, it's going to take several iterations of doing this, but we're taking all of the JavaScript that's in WordPress, we're running it against these rules, we're fixing errors, and then we're committing it. And so over time, we're going to have better formatted, better written, and cleaner JavaScript code. And permitting we do it right, there will likely be some performance enhancements. We may be able to scale back some of the code base a little bit so that it's not as large. The potential for it at this point is really hard for me to judge because this is our first stab at it. But it's going to go a long way, I think, in future development efforts, especially for people that are going to be building on WordPress moving forward.
Okay. Well, I seem to get a better understanding of it now instead of just looking at all those JavaScript errors and hints and what the programs are using. I think they're also creating, using JS Hint, I think there's some sort of automation that's also going on to fix these JavaScript errors.
Yeah, so what we can do is when we check out WordPress from the Subversion repository, we can activate this tool in our command line, and as we're going through working on the JavaScript, and like let's say every time we hit save, it'll trigger this tool to run, and it'll tell us automatically where the errors are. So we don't have to work, and then evaluate the code. Like every time we just hit save, we can look over in our terminal and see where problems are, fix them on the fly, and then can continue going.
Awesome. So in the long run, everybody's going to benefit, both developers and users, from not only consistency with these JavaScript guidelines, but also in terms of performance and things not breaking so much.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
So Sarah has a question for you, and then I've got one last question that I want to ask you before we wrap things up here. But Sarah, go ahead with your question. We have an interesting opportunity with Tom here.
As a developer who blogs, you're somewhat of a rare breed out there. most of them just prefer to build things. So why have you made it a priority to blog and share what you're learning And how would you suggest other developers might be able to incorporate it into their busy schedule? Because it seems like it's like pulling teeth to get developers to blog, but they have a lot of information to share. So
yeah,
I'm always on about this topic.
So for me personally, I have a side, like, I absolutely love programming, absolutely love it. But I also have a passion for education. When I was in college, I TA'd for, all but one semester while I was in school, and it's because I enjoy, this sounds so rainbows and butterflies, but I genuinely do enjoy helping people kind of grok these concepts, and it's kind of the marriage of two things where I enjoy helping people and educating people. I enjoy learning from other people, hence why I like having people comment, but I'm also talking about two things that I enjoy. So I'm talking about programming, and I'm trying to do it in an educational way. The problem is that when you get to speaking or you get to writing, not a whole lot of people are not a lot of people are very good communicators. And I'm not saying that I am, but I have been blogging off and on for quite a while now. Like, the current blog that I have right now is not my first. It's not even my second. And so I've been doing this for several years, and over time you just get better at it. And that doesn't mean I'm there. That doesn't mean I'm arrived. That doesn't mean I'm considering myself a great blogger. It's just the writing that I'm doing now is better than it was a year or two or three ago. And then in terms of getting developers to write, to answer your question about having them do it in their busy schedule, I think you could ask that question to any – how do you get a stay-at-home mom to talk about being a stay-at-home mom in her busy schedule? How do you get a CEO to blog in his busy schedule? You know? And the thing is that you literally just have to carve out time for it as if it's part of your job. And the thing is that one thing with programmers is that I think that we have this because we work with code and because everything has to be so spelled out, we transfer that mentality into our writing. And so when the idea of blogging comes to mind, it's like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a 3,000 word post. But it doesn't have to be that way. Instead, you could write easily 700 words. Here's a routine that I came up with. Here's the inspiration for it. Here's what it does. Please submit any fixes or ideas that you have. The end. Someone's going to learn from it, and if someone comments on it, you're going to learn from them. And so rather than taking that mentality of writing essays, just think of it as terms of, you know, 500 to 700 words, write, and set aside, you know, when I first started doing the more technical blogging stuff, I'll set up, okay, 3 times a week is what I'm going to do. And then the more you do it, it really is, this is almost a cliche, but it's like a muscle. So it's like the more you do it, all of a sudden ideas just start coming to you to the point where sitting down to write a blog post becomes like, okay, which thing do I want to write about today?
You know what I don't like about that is when you're getting ready to go to sleep and you close your eyes, and next thing you know, like 30 blog ideas pop in your head, and then you start writing the post in your head and you can't sleep.
I know that feel, bro.
You probably dream in code.
No comment, but I will say that the one thing that I have found very useful is to, if I don't have a notebook with me, I will at least use the Notes app on my phone, and I will capture enough of the idea on my phone that I can then get to my computer in the morning or whatever to flesh it out a little bit more. But yeah, shutting the brain off is that's a weird statement in and of itself, but turning your brain off just to sleep can be hard sometimes.
So one of the last questions I have for you before we wrap things up here for this week is, with your engineering background and your work involving WordPress thus far, which parts of WordPress really shine to you, and which parts of WordPress could use a lot of love?
So this is a good question, and a lot of people, and you, I'm sure, and everyone listening to this, but I know you guys are very familiar with anything that crops up on the web or on Hacker News where people will just talk about what a crapshoot the WordPress code base is and this, that, or the other. And to me, that gets so old and so stupid because it's really easy to judge open source. One, it's really easy to judge open source software. There's no way to know if the closed source software that you're using has a terrible code base because you can't see the source code. If it works, then, like, people tend to have this mentality of, if it works, then it must be coded well. But if you look at WordPress, it works. It works pretty well, but there's some really nasty parts about it. So as far as things that WordPress does really well, I think it actually does a phenomenal job. Some people will complain about the the database schema. They'll sit there and say, well, you have this single post table, and that's there for posts, pages, and all these other custom post types. But from someone, as a programmer, and from someone who's sitting there who's familiar with databases and who's familiar with how to work with the API, I think that it does a pretty good job of allowing you to organize the conceptual model of your work in code. And by that, I mean, I'm not just talking about themes, and I'm not just talking about plugins, although I do think that, you know, themes are more presentation-oriented and plugins can be more software-oriented. It is extremely extensible, hence the lively ecosystem around it for plugins and for themes. I mean, look at the money that people are making across the various marketplaces. I think that it does, some people will say WordPress doesn't scale, and I think that's a really weird statement to say, because on any given project or any given web application, it's not going to scale. You're going to have to increase the number of databases, and you're going to have to increase the number of servers off of which the site is being hosted. You're going to have to set up hardware in order to help it scale. And we know that some very, very big sites are doing some are all powered by WordPress. But the challenge...
And that whole mentality comes from the early days, you know, 2004, 2005, 2006, of a lot of people having WordPress sites, and they'd write an article, and they'd end up on Dig, and they'd end up seeing a white screen of death, and they'd say, ooh, WordPress can't scale. You know, there's that, and then, you know, that's just a black eye that WordPress hasn't been able to get rid of. But as you see on the through the WordPress showcase and all the VIP-type websites and even WordPress.com, it's fairly obvious that WordPress can scale to tens of millions of visitors every day.
And honestly, I think that sometimes people, now programmers especially, because I think that programmers, this is another thing that's probably going to get me in trouble, I think programmers can be somewhat of an arrogant bunch and not want to accept responsibility for certain things, hence patches welcome, but they will sit there and say, WordPress can't scale, I got the white screen of death. And then you can say, well, were you on a budget host, or how many databases, did you have several databases all replicated and set up in such a way that if one of them was tanked, you could be redirected to another database from which your data could be pulled? So there's a lot of different things that you could ask about that. But then the other thing is that, and this is the tough spot of WordPress. I don't want to say old, but it is a long-lived application, and that's awesome. But in order to maintain that, you do have to maintain backwards compatibility. And people hate that. They're like, well, it shouldn't be backwards compatible. Well, I don't know why. If you've got however many, you know, n number of thousands of sites powered by WordPress, why should it not be backwards compatible? But then we can welcome this kind of split that we're seeing happening with 3.7 and 3.8, where we're going to begin to remove some of the legacy code for WordPress. And the awesome thing about software is that it's software. It is soft. It can change over time. It's not like you buy your computer and, oh, man, my hard drive messed up, I have to go buy a new one. It's like, it's software. It's open source. We can add, remove, change code. It can get better. It's not stuck in this rut of, as people perceive it, is just, it's going to suck forever. And I don't think that it sucks at all. I understand where some people complain about it, but... over time, and get people a chance to continue to work on it. It's not going anywhere. It's only going to get better.
Yeah, WordPress is 10 years old now, and I've read that if it wasn't for the backwards compatibility that WordPress has, that there's a strong possibility that it wouldn't be powering 20% of the web. That it's actually helped WordPress be used by so many different people. But at the same time, you know, it's, you know, there's also a lot of articles like take Windows, for example, by Microsoft, which is just a behemoth piece of software, and most of it is made up just to be backwards compatible with everything that's come out, you know, 10 years prior to it, you know, give and take there. I mean, backwards compatibility is great, but, I mean, 10 years worth? You know, I don't know.
I mean, and honestly, like, as a plugin developer, I've had people come to me and say, hey, this doesn't work with this version of WordPress. And I have the luxury of being opinionated and saying, and it's not going to. I'm only going to support it from this version of Word. And that's kind
of... You know, the interesting thing about WordPress is that you could use a plugin that was created 5, 6, 7 years ago, and to this day, it might still work. even yeah, if there's it a, hasn't there's a updated. Strong chance I mean, it's a weird thing in the WordPress ecosystem, depending on how the plugin was coded at the time. Is it just using a simple function call? You know, has that function never been deprecated? That's why it still works. You know, it's a weird thing in the WordPress world.
Yeah, it is. It is. But hopefully that answers you guys' question. Those were good.
So, Tom, I want to thank you very much. I know we went a little bit over for you today, but I think the conversation we had was awesome. I love what you're doing in the WordPress community, and I love those articles where you kind of set everybody down saying, now, guys, we need to watch our manners, and you don't have anything nice to say. Don't say anything nice at all. So we need those reminders from you every now and then. Before we let you get out of here, why don't you give us an update in terms of what you're doing with Pressware and maybe what you're working on, upcoming projects, plugin updates. I know you just recently released an update for the plugin boilerplate that Sarah covered.
Yeah, so the boilerplate has taken off far more than I would have ever expected, and I'm super excited about that because the number of people that are contributing to it, this is one of those cases where there's people out there that are smarter, far smarter, that are making some really, really good enhancements. And ultimately the goal of that is to have it be the kind of the definitive place for people who are beginner to intermediate as a way for them to get started on writing WordPress plugins with best practices. And during that, as that project has evolved, I've had a couple of people step up and say, hey, I want to help build a site similar to underscores.me where people can go in and just put in, fill out some form fields and then download a customized package of the plugin boilerplate. And so that's something that's in the pipeline. Mm. We are working on a product page for the pipeline as well.
Listen to that. And, you got a from Sarah. She's over there writing, taking notes.
So, and it's coming. There's I'm unashamed. I'm, you know, completely unashamed to say that there's some inspirational cues were taken from Underscores in terms of also I want to give props to people who are contributing. So the page is probably going to have some custom functionality that shows who are all the contributors and things like that. I need to bring the widget boilerplate up to date, but the plugin boilerplate has kind of taken off to where I'm actually spending a significant amount of time on it. As far as Pressware is concerned, it is very much a consulting and service-based shop, so I'm working on that's predominantly contract work. I experimented with selling. I had opened up a shop to sell a few T-shirts. I'm all out of T-shirts, so I need to order some more. And I'm open to suggestions on colors and all that fun stuff. So if anyone's listening and wants a shirt, let me know what you like. As far as plugins are concerned, I was actually working on a small plugin this afternoon that I'm just going to throw up on GitHub. It's nothing huge. It's just an easy way to see the from the all pages view what template your page has without actually having to click into it. And then I'm going to get back with you guys have covered wptest.io before on the Tavern. Mm-hmm. And that was written by, he used to work with me, that was written by Michael Novotny, who used to work with me at 8-Bit. And starting in 2014, he and I are going to try to get back together and reconvene on that project, and we have some really cool ideas for it.
Sweet. So, it's like the Blues Brothers. The band is back together.
It's more or less. I mean, he plays clarinet, and I don't want a clarinet in my band. So there's some I'm just playing. But no, we're going to get back to working on that. And then I am working on a theme. I wrote a post about it this week, just teasing a little bit about it. It's following up after Standard now that Standard's basically done. I was working on that theme a little bit today. And so there's a lot of stuff going on in the pipeline right now, and I'm continuing to work with the JavaScript stuff in WordPress core. So that's kind of what's on my plate right now.
And Pressware, that's just a one-man show, right?
As of now, I am getting to a point where I am going to need to have a little bit of help, but that's probably not going to be until quarter one. So I'm just taking that in stride, but things are going really well. I'm digging it. I'm all for being more of a specialist rather than a generalist. So I used to do Ruby on Rails and WordPress, and now I just do WordPress, and it's so much better.
So before we let you go, any WordCamp events that you're planning on attending either this year or next?
Right now,
in case people want to meet you.
Right now, the only WordCamp event that I would see myself attending would be WordCamp Atlanta. That's in March, and I think it's actually around the time that my next daughter is going to be born, so I don't know if I'll even be there or not. But that's the next one that I'm hoping to make it to. We just got a busy season right now, so I won't be making it to any of the ones going on right now. But I do love following along with them on Twitter. And
WP Armchair.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was about to say. So, yeah, the next one that I would be at would be WordCamp Atlanta, and that's scheduled to be in late March of 2014.
Okay, awesome. I can't wait to share a beer with you and talk WordPress with you at some point, you know, have some of that face-to-face time.
Yeah, straight up, man. That was one of the best things last year. I got to meet a lot of the Woo crew. I got to get some FaceTime with Krogsgaard. I haven't got a chance to meet Matt Medeiros yet, but as soon as I do, the first thing I'm going to do is punch him in the face. So...
Wow. No,
that's a joke. Matt picks on me a lot, so I got to give him a hard time.
Man, Matt reports in the chat room right now. I hope he heard that. I hope if I was him, I'd get one of those catcher's face masks.
Well, he's not on the podcast, so he can't say anything in retort, so it makes me sound good, or maybe it makes me sound like a wuss, but whatever.
Awesome. And again, Tom, thanks for taking some time out. All the best of luck to you, and I'm going to keep tabs on you because that's what my job is. But thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, guys, this was a blast, and I will see you around the interwebs.
Awesome. So,
thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
So there will be no episode of WordPress Weekly next week. It's going to be Black Friday, and for whatever strange reason, I'm going to be participating in Black Friday. Yes, I am nuts. I want to admit it. But that'll be fun. So, however, we will return on December 6th with special guest. Drum roll, please. I don't have one. But thank you. Matt Mulliweg. A long time no see for Matt to be on WordPress Weekly. And, boy, that's going to be an action-packed show. And I also want to let everyone know that the schedule for WordSesh 2, which is a 24-hour... pretty much virtual WordCamp. Mm-hmm. The schedule has been announced, and it's going to take place on December 7th, 2013, between the times of, well, they use universal time, so it would be like 0000 to 2400, whatever times those are. I think it's starting at, I believe, Dreadcast will be starting off the show. And yours truly, me, will be participating in a WordPress podcast roundtable that I think is on Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern time, but I'll have to double-check the schedule to make sure. But there's a lot of speakers and a lot of content that's going to be covered in a 24-hour period of time. So if you're interested in that, I advise you to check out wordsesh.org for the schedule. And until then, that does it for this week's edition of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes on WPTavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, that's JeffFR0. And you can also follow Sarah on Twitter with the abnormally long Twitter name of...
Polly Plummer.
P-O-L-L-Y-P-U-M-M-E-R. Yeah, maybe Sarah G would be better, I don't know.
I need to get it updated.
Until next week, everybody have a safe weekend.